Scotland doesn't do winter breaks. We're back for more top flight football this weekend, and all four games are covered with DK joined by Sam Norris to preview them shortly. Robbie Savage gives you his just past mid-season, end of season predictions and puts a points total on the top eight in the Premier League. What did you make of Jurgen Klopp's decision to miss Liverpool's FA Cup replay with Shrewsbury? Well, our friends at the Football Writers Association discussed that on The Verdict, and Derek has his bit. We have best bets in the Football League too with Pete, Gab and Al. But this weekend starts with Everton hosting a struggling Crystal Palace. Over to you, DK.
Palace are really struggling at the moment. We'll come to them in a few seconds' time. First of all, a warm welcome to Sam Norris, who joins me in the studio this week ahead of the Premier League fixtures. Good to have you company.
Thanks very much for having me back, Dave. Looking forward to it. Obviously, we've only got the four games televised this weekend, but I'm pleased that the Premier League have found a way to get in a winter break, but also mean that we don't have blank weeks of football. So it's a good initiative, I think.
Yeah, four games are live on TV this weekend. We'll start with Everton versus Palace at Goodison. Looking forward to this game. Palace without a win since beating West Ham on Boxing Day. Everton have been much better since Ancelotti came in. First of all, of course, Duncan Ferguson. And some people say managers don't get time. I think Marco Silva had plenty of time and it didn't work out. Lost eight of his last 11 games in charge. Since they've had this Duncan Ferguson-Ancelotti combination, Ancelotti now taken full-time charge. They've only lost one in their last 10, Everton. And they're odds on to win this game, as you would anticipate. Everton 63-100 to win the match, Sam. The draw 27-10 with Crystal Palace in the betting at 5-1. Full range of markets online and on the app. And Everton, worthy market leaders. It's just whether or not you think they should be as short as they are in the betting, I suppose.
That's kind of the issue, really, isn't it? They are quite thin in the betting. As you rightly pointed out, they've been revived under Carlo Ancelotti, really. The only game that they have lost during that period was away at Manchester City, so yep, that's eminently forgivable. Just an interesting quirk with Everton games recently. If you've been attending Everton games and you've popped off for maybe an early pie or a pint in the first half, you've tried to beat the traffic in the second half, you've missed all the action. There's been seven goals in the last three games in the last 5 minutes of either half. So from minute 40 to 45 and from minute 85 to 90, just loads of action. There's been four goals for Everton and three goals against. So whether you're a follower of certain patterns, you could look at perhaps backing a late goal in either half in this game. Everton are very short here, but the big problem for me is Palace just don't score enough goals. I don't massively want to be with Everton at this kind of price, but I'm also not in the business of backing teams that don't score. Crystal Palace are the lowest goal scorers in the Premier League. They've only scored 22 all season. And arguably an even more damning statistic for me is they've had the least shots on target in the entirety of the Premier League. That's, if anything, worse than the fact that they've scored the least goals. So two real negatives there for Crystal Palace. And I would struggle to find an argument to back a team that are so poor in front of goal. Any team that goes to Cenk Tosun as the answer in January for their striking options is evidently struggling. And they don't score enough for me to want to back them with any kind of conviction, unfortunately.
I'll be backing Richarlison to score any time in this game. I think he's one of the outstanding players in terms of these two lineups. Obviously, Wilfred Zaha for Palace as well. But I fancy Everton here. I'm backing Richarlison to score in an Everton win. What's your bet?
I've got to frame my bet around the fact that I think Palace will either score none or they'll score few. So there's a few bets that could be on the shortlist here. Everton to win, Everton to win to nil. Maybe under Crystal Palace 1.5 team goals, something like that could be of interest. But there's quite a striking stat in here as regards first half performance. Everton have the best ratio in the Premier League of scoring their goals in the first half. 61% of their goals have come in the first 45. Palace, on the other hand, just 23%. Of their first half goals. That's a league lowest. Only five of their 22 have come in the first half. So one of the best first half teams against one of the worst first half teams. I'll take Everton just to win the first 45-minute period. That's odds against. They're odds on for the match. So I think Everton to win the first half looks a good bet here.
OK, Everton to lead at half-time for Sam. That's his number one bet in the match. Now we're going to hear from Robbie Savage with his top eight at the end of the season. He puts points totals on these as well. And he's proving he can read in this clip, Robbie Savage.
13 games to go in the Premier League, so I've predicted the current top eight scores from now until the end of the season. Bear with me. So let's start. Top of the league, winning it by 110 points. That's Liverpool in second, Manchester City. They'll be on 78 points. Leicester in third, 74 points. In fourth, it's Chelsea, 66 points. Spurs in fifth on 63. United in sixth on 61, Wolves in seventh on 60, and Sheffield United on 54 in eighth. Liverpool have got to play two of the top eight, City four of the top eight, Leicester five of the top eight, Chelsea 6, Spurs 5, United 5, Wolves 4, and Sheffield United 5. So there you have it. Chelsea in the all-important fourth place in the Premier League to qualify for the Champions League. And Liverpool on 110 points. There you have it. Statman Sav.
That's Savage then and his prediction for the top eight in the Premier League. Let me spin you through the betting for a top four finish this season in the top flight. Leicester 1-12 to finish in the top four, Sam. Chelsea 4-9, that's Savage's prediction for the fourth place spot. Spurs in the betting at 11-4, United 8-1, Wolves, your team 10-1, Sheffield United 20-1, 33s and bigger the rest. Tempted by Wolves?
You've got to be a little bit tempted. In a season where everyone bar Liverpool is dropping points at a real rate of knots, you can't really rule anybody out of this. And ever since Leicester won the league a few years ago, everything's plausible now. So, you know, the likes of Wolves and Sheffield United, I wouldn't be that surprised if they're still hanging around at the end of the year. I don't think you can discount anyone when everyone's dropping points like this, basically. For me, I think Spurs are probably the best in that market. You remember pre-season, Dave, no one had Spurs anywhere other than third. Everyone was completely in agreement that either Liverpool or Manchester City would win the league.
Yep.
People had disagreements about fourth and below. But that third spot belonged to Spurs pre-season. And I know that they've changed manager. They've lost their best player now for the majority of the season. But I don't think enough has changed at Spurs to suggest that they're not still one of the best teams in the country. I'm not saying they'll go on and finish third now. I think Leicester probably will finish third.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I can see Spurs picking up enough points from now until the end of the season. I know Chelsea have obviously got the advantage. They're odds on for a reason. They're in the box seat. But would I want to take odds on that they don't drop that many points from now until the end of the season with that young squad as well? Mm. Maybe it's just a bit of recency bias. Spurs got the big win, of course, at the weekend against Manchester City. But for me, they're a good bet in that market, Spurs, given all the pre-season rankings. And I think once we iron out the entirety of the season, Spurs might be a little bit closer to where we expected them to be pre-season.
Okay, 11-4 Spurs to finish in the top four. Let's talk about the next one. Brighton versus Watford at the Amex. Brighton 23-20 here. The draw in the market at 23-10. Watford 5-2. Remember, you can build your odds bet on the William Hill website and on the app as well. I don't think many people will be backing Brighton in this one at shared of odds against. They've only won 1 in 10 now. And they are starting to struggle a little bit. Admittedly, Watford picked up when Nigel Pearson came in. They had that new manager bounce. And there's always going to be some sort of regression to the mean, isn't there? And that seems to have happened in Watford's most recent Premier League encounters.
You're absolutely right. It feels as though their form is just beginning to plateau a little bit.
Yeah.
Obviously, they were beaten by Liverpool in Nigel Pearson's first game in charge. Everyone gets beat by Liverpool this season. Went unbeaten in the next six, winning four of those. But as you say, back-to-back defeats now have kind of brought them back down to earth a little bit. It's the manner of those defeats as well. They've been real body blows. Both were 90-minute winners for their opposition. So that has to knock the confidence a little bit. But as you rightly pointed out, this is quite a tight price about Brighton, really, who I'm not sure I particularly rate all that much. I think the football is better under Graham Potter this season, but ultimately the results are kind of similar to what they were under Chris Hughton. The only game in their last 10 that they've managed to win was against Bournemouth, who were in a real rut at the time as well.
Yep.
I couldn't really be too interested in backing Brighton at just a smidge over even money in this match. I think home advantage affects the prices too much in these kind of games. I think as a result, Brighton are artificially short in terms of their real mathematical chance of winning the match.
And if you're watching The Pump, by the way, I'm proud of this one. I have to come up with these headlines each and every week. This is the best of a
bunch
so far this season. So we're looking for bets here. I'd be focusing on maybe a Watford goal scorer in Troy Deeney. I mean, Nigel Pearson's come in. There's undoubtedly been an upturn in their performances. They're in the relegation zone again. They slipped back into the relegation zone. But I think Troy Deeney's leadership has been a big factor in Watford's recent success anyway.
He seems to have responded to the change of the manager more than anybody else. I mean, you just look at his stats under Nigel Pearson. He scored 5 goals already, which for a team at that end of the table, for a man to have scored 5 goals during that period of time is pretty good. And when you look at the fact that only Mo Salah and Sergio Aguero have scored more goals during the time that Nigel Pearson has been Watford manager, that just shows how much Troy Deeney has really stepped up. And he'd be my idea of a goal scorer bet in this match as well, Troy Deeney.
Okay, we're looking for bets here. I'm focusing on 2 goal scorers. Troy Deeney is one of them, definitely. And Glenn Murray, the other man, I think, could get on the score sheet here. Just signed a 1-year extension. I'm a believer in things like that.
Really?
Signs a 1-year extension. Obviously, scored in his most previous game as well. I'm going with Murray and Deeney both to score in the match.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Troy Deeney as well. 5 goals since Nigel Pearson took over represents a really, really good record. I couldn't have Brighton on my mind at all. I'm not sure I can quite stretch to back Watford, but I think Watford plus a goal, something around that mark, would probably do just fine. They're a big price. Do you want to row in on the 90-minute betting? Maybe not. But Watford with a goal head start could be a decent way in. But I'm in agreement with you. I think Troy Deeney is the angle into this match for me.
Very good, Troy Deeney to score. Maybe first, possibly to score any time as well in this match. I know one of your favourite parts of the punt is hearing from Derek. So we'll do that now. Let's get a Derek's bit on this week's punt.
It's the turn this week of the winter break to wreck the Premier League. Hard on the heels of International Week wrecking it, of the FA Cup wrecking it, and of Arsenal wrecking it. Actually, that's not strictly true. There are only 4 games this weekend, but that's 3 of those are Everton v Palace, Brighton v Watford, and Sheffield United v Bournemouth. It's more a case of the Premier League wrecking the winter break. A winter break is a good idea only when the Winter Olympics crop up, which, like my round, they seem to do with annoying regularity. Managers whose teams sometimes have to swallow 4 games in 10 days over the winter period have long called for a winter break, and you can understand their reasoning. 4 games in 10 days is a punishing schedule for anyone, and that includes me, even if the game is chess. Advocates for the break claim it boosts England's chances of doing well in a major competition. These are the same people who advocated Sven-Göran Eriksson, Steve McClaren, Fabio Capello and Roy Hodgson as ways of boosting England's chances of doing well in major competitions. They said when David Moyes returned to West Ham it guaranteed survival, but the only thing Moyes' return to Premier League football guaranteed was that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer would no longer be favourite for the sack race. Under Moyes, West Ham have fallen into the bottom 3 and are running short of winnable games. Then again, that could have been said about them in August. They need to travel to Manchester City immediately before their winter break and need to travel to Liverpool immediately after it. During it, they'll need to travel for counselling. Moyes already seems to have lost the West Ham dressing room. Worse still, he has no idea where he left it. You could argue that the 1-12 quoted for a Manchester City victory shows how bad West Ham are. I'd say it shows how bad City are. City, who think nothing of paying £50 million for the fullback to stick in their reserves, have lost as many Premier League games this season as Wolves. City manager Pep Guardiola is rated the best coach in the world. Discuss. Thing is, City always hammer West Ham. It's as certain as night following day, adverts following half time, or payment following sex. In the last 7 Premier League meetings, City have scored 23 goals, a total they could match this weekend. City are 13-8 to overcome a 3-goal handicap. I'm all over it like a cheap suit, which I have plenty of. After last week's blowout, I could do with a winning nap. Luckily, I have just the thing, Crystal Palace at 5-1 to win at Everton.
I don't think I could be more against Derek this week. Palace at 5-1, not for me in their current form. I can understand why I'd go for Palace because they're such a big price, but it's such a Derek bet, that one, isn't it?
He's just anti-Everton and anti-Manchester United, isn't he?
Basically, yeah.
Typical Liverpool fan.
Let's move on to Sheffield United versus Bournemouth. Sheffield United... odds on, 8-11 to win the game. The draw is 5-2. Bournemouth in the betting at 9-2. Check out the William Hill website and the app for all the latest as far as the enhanced odds are concerned and so on and so forth. I've given up trying to predict Sheffield United. I hate them.
I really do.
Yeah, I really do. Every time I go against them, they win, and I've been against them for the majority of the season. I was convinced that once they had those back-to-back losses away from home against Manchester City and Liverpool, teams were starting to work them out. And it feels stupid even saying that because they've gone to 2 of the strongest teams in the Premier League and performed admirably and just not picked up points. Since then, they're back on the horse. They've qualified, or they've been through 2 rounds of the FA Cup, winning in the league again. And he's just done an amazing job, Chris Wilder. I say it every single week, but it's astonishing how Sheffield United have performed. And they're one of the best promoted teams in the last 20 years.
They're absolutely incredible. In any normal Premier League year where Liverpool weren't doing such ridiculous things, he'd be right toward the top of Manager of the Year candidates.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure he'll be on a shortlist anyway, but I don't think he's going to beat Jurgen Klopp to it. It's interesting, when Sheffield United got promoted, having watched a little bit of them in the Championship last year, I thought their games would be great for goals. The way those centre-backs overlapped, they looked very good going forward. They looked good at the back in the Championship, but I thought, can you really have overlapping centre-backs in the Premier League and expect to keep so many clean sheets?
And it's worked, hasn't it? It's unbelievable.
They just adapt to everything. They're just exceptionally well coached. If ever you want evidence of a manager really having an impact on a team, Sheffield United are it. They just look really well coached. They've got an answer for almost everyone they come up against. And they're one of your least favourite teams. They've been one of my favourite teams this year both to watch and both to punt on.
Let
as
me
well.
Qualify this only because they keep scuppering my predictions.
But didn't you put up David McGoldrick to score a few weeks ago? The man of 30 odd shots and no goals. You've only got yourself to blame for that.
That's true. Alex reminded me of that last week. I don't know if it was on the punt or off air, but he said basically one of my best bets all season was 2-1 for a player that's not scored at any time all season to score at any time in 90 minutes. And yes, in hindsight, that wasn't the wisest pick in the world. As far as this game's concerned, I think Sheffield United will win the match. I'm going as my best bet here, Sheffield United and under 2.5 goals. No side, the only side to concede fewer goals this season is Liverpool than Sheffield United. So that's my selection in the match.
I'm in agreement with you once again here, actually. I really do fear for Bournemouth. They've won back-to-back games now, but prior to that, they'd failed to score against a real rogue bunch of teams. Norwich, Watford, West Ham and Brighton didn't get a goal against any of those teams. You're now asking them to get a goal against the second-best defence in the Premier League.
Yeah.
I just don't see it. I think Bournemouth not scoring has to be a big factor in your bets here. And I love Sheffield United and unders. Seven times this season, they've won a game in the Premier League 1-0 or 2-0. They've only won 9 games and 7 of them have been by a 1 or 2-0 scoreline. So that's absolutely the bet here, Blades and Unders.
OK, Sheffield United to win another 2.5 goals in the match. Now, it's time for something a bit new here. We've got the verdicts coming up with our friends at the Football Writers Association. They are talking and discussing whether Jurgen Klopp should have fielded a weakened side against Shrewsbury in the FA Cup. Let's hear their thoughts now.
What's happened with Liverpool and the FA Cup probably tells us more about Jurgen Klopp and his place in English football today than about the FA Cup itself, which is now such a low priority for clubs.
It's supposed to be a winter break. Talking about fatigue, one is to protect players for the rest of the season, and then you've ended up scheduling replays in the middle of it, so it's not really a break.
It's not the first time this has happened. Sir Alex Ferguson obviously missed a League Cup game when he was manager at Manchester United with Scunthorpe to go and scout David De Gea. It's not the first time, it's not something that's completely left field.
The fact that Klopp has put on the second string team for this competition, after all they already beat Everton that way, is not a shame or a scandal. The fact he didn't turn up is completely unforgivable, but the extraordinary thing is that he's been forgiven.
I kind of find it a bit odd that he's basically won the league. Why he doesn't want to go for the cup, why he doesn't want to make the cup and now a priority, because I can tell you this, Liverpool fans would love a treble.
For Klopp and his first team not to feature against Shrewsbury, I'm not sure it's too much of a big thing.
I think Jurgen Klopp has made his stand, and I think he's got a point.
He's been able to make his big statement and be heard loud and clear without incurring actually real criticism. And that, I think, tells you all about Jurgen Klopp and what he's become in English football. He's basically, like Alex Ferguson was before him, the boss.
That was a nice piece. Bit of a difference of opinion there as well regarding Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp's decision not to take the FA Cup that seriously. But I think Jurgen Klopp was well within his rights, because the Premier League shouldn't have scheduled, or the FA shouldn't have scheduled, a cup match in the middle of the Premier League winter break.
And it's deeds, not words, in this game. You can whinge all you want in your pre-match press conferences, your post-match press conferences about fixture congestion, but until you actually do something, until you do a real tangible action.
That's
the only way anyone's going to sit up and listen. So fielding such a weakened team in the FA Cup, whilst a lot of fans understandably didn't like it, that's maybe the only way that you're going to get anyone to listen to the fact that the fixture congestion has, in Jurgen Klopp's mind, gone beyond the pale, really.
So well within his rights then?
I think so, yeah. I think if you care as deeply about fixture congestion as he seems to, then you need to not just moan about it, you need to actually do something, actually create some kind of an action. And in the end, they progressed anyway. It seems a little bit strange to me that they don't want to cap this incredible team and this incredible season with as many trophies as they possibly can. Why not try and win a treble, a quadruple, a quintuple? They're 22 points clear now in the Premier League. The time to rest players is in the Premier League matches. Surely they should be going all out to try and win the League Cup and the FA Cup. The scheduling of the League Cup wasn't really their fault, to be fair. And they're through the FA Cup now anyway. But I just think they should be going all out to win every trophy they possibly can, because this team's incredible.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you want the Premier League and the FA to listen to you about fixture congestion, this is what he needs to do to make a stand.
Yeah, very good. Let's talk about Manchester City versus West Ham next. City are 1-12 to win this game. The draw is 9-1, West Ham in the betting at 28-1. The fallout from Manchester City's latest Premier League defeat against Spurs has been delightful, because you've had you've had those analysts saying that focus on expected goals, saying it was just one of those freak results, and nine times out of ten City would have won that game against Spurs. And then you've had the Jose Mourinho truthers emerge from the woodwork as well, suggesting it was a tactical masterclass, and these people that rely on such stats are sucking the joy from the game. I've enjoyed it. I'd lean towards the analysts and suggest that it was just one of those freak results, but they've had a few freak results like that this season, Manchester City, games where they've not capitalised on their dominance, and that was just the latest in a long list.
Yeah, it's been a strange season for Manchester City. More of those freak results than normally occur for them. They've already lost, I think, more Premier League games this year than they have in seasons gone by. It's interesting, you mentioned metrics such as expected goals. Top of my list of notes for this game was ask DK his opinion on XG. are you a believer?
Yeah, I'm a believer. Yeah. It's definitely, you've definitely got to factor it in, and I think it will help you in the future predict results. I think it's so open to the public now, expected goals, that the bookmakers have cottoned onto it as well. And you don't get, I mean, I think it's coming around to a situation now where you need to trust your eyes a little bit more, as well as the stats, because the stats inform the market now, I think, as well. But yeah, you've got to take expected goals seriously. But I think with City's case, they've just lacked that clinical touch throughout the course of the season. Mm. So it's all about whether or not their strikers can get it going. And this is a game where I expect a City backlash, because they're going up against West Ham, who are in turmoil at the moment, really, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah. And the great thing about expected goals for me is it kind of adds to what you're seeing with the naked eye. Everybody who watched the game last week, I think, thought Manchester City were probably deserving of at least a point, if not all three. But then when you attach some numbers to that, their expected goals was above three. Spurs was something like 0.29. That really kind of points toward their dominance. And if they're in that kind of mood against West Ham, it's just going to be an absolute bloodbath. They're going to create even more chances against West Ham if they play up to that level again. And this really could be a huge score. But they're very short in the betting to do so. I think I agree with you, there will be a reaction. If they get up to anywhere near the performance against Spurs, they're going to absolutely ruin these. I thought it was quite interesting in Pep Guardiola's post-match interview. He kept the players in the dressing room for a long time. Mm. And one of the questions posed towards him was, you know, were you being critical of your players in there? Which tends to be the general idea that we all have as the public. And Pep Guardiola kind of shook his head. He's been a bit spiky in interviews recently. And he was again. But he said, how could I criticise the players after that performance? And I kind of agree with him. I thought they were good against Spurs. They didn't get what they deserved. But if they're at that level, they'll get what they deserve here.
I think we're both looking at a pro City bet here. So let me spin you through some possible markets on the handicap, especially. City minus 2 is 4-6. City minus 3 in the betting at 13-8. I just want to dig a little bit deeper into West Ham's problems as well. There's a myriad of problems for West Ham at the moment. It starts with the ground, as far as I'm concerned. The London Stadium is a soulless football ground, and they've not invested in the infrastructure either. The practice facilities aren't great at West Ham. And this is a cash-rich club as well. And I think that's affecting the players. It's definitely affecting the fans, and it's been transmitted in their poor performances.
Absolutely. And in the modern game, you can't really get away with poor recruitment, particularly when it comes to playing staff and manager staff, which obviously comes down to the lack of investment. They've purchased a lot of players that haven't really lived up to their price tags. And there's loads and loads of examples of how great recruitment can take you to great heights over the last few years. Leicester, obviously, the big example. Some of the players that they plucked from the top two tiers in France for small money were incredible. Yep. Southampton have recruited exceptionally well over the last few years. I think that's a big reason why they've been able to stay in the Premier League so long. The recruitment just hasn't been there for West Ham. It's not just the players as well. Management also. I'm not that enthused with the appointment of David Moyes. Yeah, there were a lot of people who kind of thought he would be able to do a decent, serviceable job there. I wasn't that sure.
Okay.
And they're banging the mire again now.
Bets in this one then. I'm going with Manchester City minus 3. I think West Ham feel the full backlash. City have got a fantastic record against the Hammers as well. I'm going Manchester City minus 3 on the handicap here.
Yeah, this is a great game for Pep Guardiola to try and bounce back in. He's 8 from 8 against Manchester City. That's his joint best 100% record against any team through the course of his managerial career. I agree with you. I think there's going to be a big response here, particularly if City can play up to the way they did against Spurs. Raheem Sterling will probably miss this match, but he's had so much success in the past against West Ham. If Riyad Mahrez plays that Raheem Sterling role in this game, I'd be interested in him getting on the score sheet. But the bet I'll end up on just looking for something odds against here. You've got to delve deep into the handicaps to get some odds against. I'll go for City and both teams to score. It's been quite a lucrative bet this year. Eight times it's landed in the Premier League. They have struggled at the back. Laporte's come back in, but I still don't think those defensive issues are solved. I think they win by a street here, Manchester City, but I can't ever back them to keep a clean sheet. So the fact that that's odds against in a sea of odds on pro City bets, I'll go for them and both teams to score again.
Very good. City and both teams to score for Sam. Now it's time for the Football League guys with their best bets, starting off with Pete Farries in the Championship.
This week's nap is going to be Reading and overs at 19-10. They take on a Hull side who've lost their last five games in a row, have sold their best striker and not replaced him, and have conceded 9 goals in 3 games. While Reading's home form hasn't been brilliant, the truth of the matter is that they're taking on a side who look pretty beleaguered and have made some bad choices. Reading have let me down at times this season, but I'm going back with them again to outscore a very, very weak-looking Hull side. Reading and overs, 19-10, the nap.
Coventry City at home to Bolton Wanderers, the focus of my nap this weekend. Coventry are 4-9 to win, which is an acca price, but I'm going to boost that by going for goals in this one. I know Coventry were involved in FA Cup action going to penalties during the week. I still trust them to get the job done. Bolton have conceded 15 in the last 5 away games in League One. They took a couple of trouncings. I'm expecting Coventry to win this with a few goals. Coventry to score in both halves, my nap at 7-5.
Northampton, yes, beaten 4-2 at Derby in midweek, but Championship against a League 2 side who forced a replay and it needed Wayne Rooney to make the game safe. You actually have to go back to Boxing Day 10 games ago for Northampton's previous defeat. League-wise, it's a side that's won 5 in 6, and Port Vale are the opposition, if you can call them that on the road. 4 away defeats in 5, 12 goals conceded. The only game they didn't lose in that time was at the Stevenage side, who've not managed a home win since October. So Northampton, even money.
Nap selections then, we've just heard from Pete, Gav and Al. I know you wanted a little bit of input in this naps table, so I've decided to take your nap this week because my fall from grace is, it's just a consistent slide. Every week I tumble a tenner and I'm down to 63.25, having been in triple figures. Al's absolutely flying. 151 quid for the season to a £10 level stake. Pete's going well, Gav is going well, Alex and Derek aren't going so well. But I'm going with your selection that you mentioned on the show. I fancy Everton to win first half. Just give us that reasoning one more time.
Well, firstly, it's just quite a nice price. There'll be a lot of people that look at Everton at an odds-on price to win the match and wince, really, this weekend. But in terms of just the first half, Everton score 61% of their goals in the first half. That's league-leading. Crystal Palace only scored 23% of their goals in the first half. That's bottom of the league for that metric. Just 5 of their 22 goals have been scored in the first half. Palace won't get many, if at all, in the game full stop. So just banking on Everton to notch in the first half, as they've done so many times this year, I think is a decent bet. And it's odds against, and it takes
what
out
price is it?
The full-time result as well. It's 11-8.
11-8, yeah. Very good. Everton to win the first half is my best bet, and I'm hoping Sam Norris can pull me out of this current mire that I'm sitting in. Thank you for your company, Sam. It's been
Thanks
my pleasure.
Thanks very much for having me, Dave.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and watched or listened to The Punt. Check out all the betting at williamhill.com and on the app, and we will be back with more action next week. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. Make sure you check out all the betting, and if you're having a bet this week, the very best of luck.